E1. Number 32B.
And so it is with the second day. The second day also has a perfection of its own. It says, let there be a firmament. Then God made the firmament. And afterwards he said, and he called the firmament heaven. It's established in its perfection. So that we must not always think of perfection as that which is at the end of a long development. Somewhere after death, somewhere up in heaven, or that there is only perfection. No, every experience can have a perfection of its own. Every idea has a perfection of its own. Just as every game of chess you play can have success. And you can win the game. So, and then principle, we said, is omni action. Or we said, all that is going on is principle's idea. All that is going on, I think we said, going on is principle's idea. Yeah. So that's what we had in the science order. And now we really would have to see how the whole thing looks like if we put it now in a bigger framework. See, that's what this law means. Huh? We said the science order per se, we said, is the law of structural understanding. Okay. But then if we enlarge the frame of reference to include it into the science of absolute Christian science, namely to include it, so to say, can I put it here, into truth? See? Into truth and into love over here. See, I use another diagram, just trying out how one could illustrate that every law of interdependence has a different manner, the type. Here we have a feeling that there is no process going on if I put it on the left and the right side, that so to say that the science order is sandwiched in within the bigger frame of reference, namely truth and love, so that we can see that the science order now takes on a different meaning, a different value, a bigger value, really, a much bigger value. What would we see in truth? If we take the identities of being and say our elements with which we calculate are the elements of being, the ideas of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, then we can say from the higher reference of truth and love, yes, these ideas were the eternal facts. These ideas are the eternal facts of truth. We put them into the pre-stabilized realm of the real, and we could perhaps say here that ideas are eternal facts of truth. Yeah. So we begin to see that our identities with which we are working were those eternal facts. They are true. And if we take them as those eternal facts within the framework of love, here on the right side, see, then we see And love is that which gives perfection and completeness of the whole thing. We see that really ideas are what? That they are the constituents of a whole. Constituents of a perfect whole. Can you see the point? That this is a wider system of reference. As long as we just had the identities of being and say these are our elements, they were, so to say, hanging in the air, in a void. And now we bring it into a frame of reference and say, these are the facts, truth, which are the constituents, the ideas, the constituents of a whole, of a consistent whole. They are not just isolated facts, isolated truth, but they are truth constituting a whole, truth and love. See, always with truth and love, we just have to see that they existed forever in completeness. If we take now further down spirit and truth and see that within that great system of reference there are constantly reflections going on, and we only had that new reflections will bring forth new forms, at all what we had. But now we say, yeah, that's okay, but this is not just a reflection at random, where something just happens at random, and at random you find really new truth. But if you put it into a frame of reference, you can see now in truth that truth is that which dominates the reflection, says truth restructures the idea according to its own laws. You have now suddenly those big commanding impacts which says truth restructures. That's what spirit and truth does. It is the new reflections, but these new reflections are not just random reflections at random. But there is a truth that says, I am going to restructure. And I'm going to restructure and make this new reflection according to my own laws. So truth restructures the ideas, these facts, say according to its own laws. Here we have the reason why there is no blind development, that there is not just a reflection and reflection going on without any purpose in it. But truth says, I am going to restructure it. I know what I want to achieve. That's what truth knows. And therefore, in love, because truth knows it and we don't know it, these reflections bringing out new forms are always new forms which bring, so to say, unexpected solutions. Unexpected solutions. You could also say optimal solutions. It would be the same thing. Optimal solutions. Or you could say, in other words, the impossible becomes possible. See, that's love, huh? You can look at it very easily, you know, in order to see what happens. Let me take an illustration. Yes, Let's take the illustration, say, of chemistry. We were already talking once about it. And let's take the chemistry, and there you have your 92 elements. That's soul and life. And then you come to spirit and truth. And if you don't have a wider system of reference, but just combining these elements, you know how to combine them. You have the rules and of how to combine them. And you combine them, and what you get is always a new product. But that new product may be of no avail. In every experiment you get something, but that experiment may not be any solution. And perhaps only after 1,000 or 2,000 various experiments you may fall on something unexpected and say, now something completely new has been brought about, the impossible has become possible, or I've seen a better method and I've brought out an optimal solution. See, all what you have over here are quite unexpected. You get something which is much bigger than what we have been expecting in those experiments. So being itself does not work that way. Being itself does not work on the assumption that out of 10,000 experiments, one will succeed. You see? That wouldn't be a really a nice science of being. If you just had trial and error until after many trials and error, you fall suddenly on something big. So if we put that process into the bigger framework, that of truth and love, namely into the bigger framework, what did he say what truth and love is? Into the bigger framework that in truth the best solution is already there, and therefore in an optimal form, love, so you can see that truth is doing the processing, that truth restructures and chooses those reflections, those specific reflections here, which bring forth the unexpected solution or something like the optimal solution or the impossible becomes possible. Can you see that? We, alone in science itself, we see spirit and truth. We see that every idea can combine with every other idea. That's reflection. And as it can combine with every other reflection, it does bring out a new form. Just as every combination of numbers with each other bring out a new result. So there is nothing really great about that per se, except that it is nice to know that there are processing laws. But if we want to see it as a right solution, we have to say, well, these reflections bringing out the right solutions are pre-established in the realm of the real. There, the fact is already established. The real combination is already established, which gives the perfect solution. And so I begin to see that it is truth that is using the calculus of spirit and truth to restructure and to choose, so to say, those computations of ideas which suddenly say, golly, I got it. I have it. Something terrifically new has come out. That's truth and love. Did you have once in the war a poster that said, the possible we do at once and the impossible takes a bit longer? Well, this is the law here. that it says the impossible is possible. But it's only possible by seeing that we bring it back to truth and see that it has its solution there already, because truth knows the true calculus. He knows how, the truth is not the he, it knows how to restructure itself, to bring out the perfect solution. Let's go to mind and love. To mind and love, to the fourth dimension. We had there as the fourth dimension that each idea has a perfection of its own. You see, I think this is one of the most important points in this whole law, because it is of the greatest practical value for each one. Namely, it's again to show what? That an idea has a perfection of its own, but that we should not be satisfied just with that, that the perfection should always be the perfection when seen within the whole of being, and not just as its own. So that we see a healing per se may show forth humanly a perfection, was a perfect demonstration, we say, because it pleased us. But when we may consider it within a broader system of reference, as we have seen, if we look at it, how does that idea look like, how does that experience and that demonstration look like within a bigger frame of reference, then we may see, perhaps, not always, but perhaps, that something which is true and perfect per se may not be true or right when seen in the whole. This is another paradox, that something which is right in one system of reference may be wrong in a bigger system of reference, and vice versa. So it all depends on the system of reference. Now here we put on this understanding of mind and love, we put on it the higher system of reference of the one truth in its perfection. And so we can see that a truth is only a truth when seen within the whole truth. Can you see that? Let's put it down. A truth is only a truth when seen within the whole truth. See, that's why we need truth and love, because truth and love says, I am the whole truth, and that whole truth is perfect. Can you see that for your own life? For your own whole plane of life? We go through life, and it is like this, you know, that we have a very narrow horizon, really, because we just see what happens today and perhaps tomorrow. What happens within, say, a small system of reference, our family, our home, our business, our way of living. And there is usually the border of it, that's the frame of reference. And with that, within that little system of frame of reference, we are seeing something as perfect, or wishing something to be perfect. But is it right when we look at it within the whole framework of our whole life? of 70, 80 years. Then it takes a completely different perspective. When we always turn back on our life and look back and say, oh yes, you know, there, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, I went through a terrible situation. I went through an awful crisis. I just felt that I would lose, what you say, the ground under my feet. And now I see that was the best thing that could have happened. Now, something is at one time declared right or declared wrong, and at another time to declare right. Now, where is the logic? Is there any true logic in it that something can be right and wrong? And this is really what brought forth the multi-valued logic, the four-valued logic, like Wertheimer has shown, that the two-value logic, the Aristotelian logic, is really no more right, no more adapted to our present life, that we should use a logic which is no more the classical logic. That's why Mrs. Eddy speaks of the infinite logic, because she could see that logic depends on frame of reference. Within a small frame of reference, we see that something is wrong, and within the bigger frame of reference, that very same thing is right. What makes it really right is to have as big a system of reference as possible. So here we put the perfection of each idea within a bigger frame of reference, and only then can we say it is right. From the point of view of love, we see naturally that each idea is perfect. Only then, you see, when it is integrated into the big plan, into the whole, so that we can say every truth or each truth, a truth integrated into the whole. There you really get all those things which are so important today, like ecology. This is really the point of ecology, you see, that something which by itself seems to be right, like, say, the production of atomic power with all its atomic residue. Atomic power is wonderful, it's good, it's fine, we need it, we don't have any other energy at hand, we must build atomic power stations, and then suddenly something else comes and you put that into the whole ecology of the world, and then suddenly some people cry, we don't want them. They disturb the whole balance of the world, and you have the moment, therefore, that perfect idea, which was perfect within a little system of reference, when integrated into the whole, really can become imperfect. So a truth is only truth, first when seen, when put into the whole, and when put into the whole, it is an integral part of the whole. You could also put there a truth as an integral part of the whole. And you have the tone of love, huh? Yes. You see, it's terrific. Each one of us has a life. And we have to take life serious. And I think each one of us who takes life serious thinks, I want to make the best of our lives, my life. If I succeed or not succeed, but at least I should try to make the best of my life. And right away, we may make the biggest mistake. Namely, that we figure out what is the perfect idea of my life. And we make a picture of our life, what we may attain, to what we may devote ourselves. And this is just mind and love. That each idea has a perfection of its own. And so we may devote our life to something which is too small. Too small. But if we can really put it right back into the one great system of reference which has one truth, the whole of truth, in its whole perfection, then we let that system of reference define to us our life mission. And then we know that then our life mission is integrated into the big plan of love. And that makes a whole lot of difference. Then I may have to do things which I have never thought I would do.